first episode of the Monster Baby Podcast.
Monster Baby Podcast.
We are super happy that you're here and that you're listening, and we're excited about embarking on this experiment together.
Yeah, in this first episode, you're going to hear us introduce ourselves so you know who the heck we are. And we're going to talk a little bit about what we're trying to do with this podcast and why we came up with a name.
So we'll talk about some of the origin story of Monster Baby, and then also we'll tiptoe into the everybody's favorite topic, failure.
Everybody loves failure.
And what mindfulness has to say about it, what improv has to say about it, what we have to say about it.
Great.
So we hope you like it and find it interesting.
Yeah, let us know what you think, and we're so excited to be embarking on this journey together.
Yeah, so listen up.
I guess we're talking.
Okay. Monster Baby Podcast, take one, episode one.
Take one, check one.
Attempt number one.
This is it. First steps.
Welcome, everybody.
Our many, many fans, our legions.
Yes, to the an experiment.
A grand experiment.
Which we call Monster Baby.
A curious romp through the worlds of mindfulness and improvisation.
My name is Lisa Rowland.
I am Ted Desmaison.
And we will be your tour guides.
Welcome to the tour.
On this romp. So where to start?
Well, I think it's important to say that neither of us has done a podcast before. So this is...
Yes.
We're taking a step with you, listeners.
Yes.
Because we have no really idea what's going to happen.
So this is a... if one were to take a tour... with a tour guide who had never been to the place.
You might discover things together.
This would be what it's like. So we're very excited to find out where this goes. And we're excited that you'll be there along with us. Maybe.
That sounds right to me.
Great.
And at certain points during this podcast, you may hear a feline or two as Ralph and Luna are wandering about.
Yeah.
And may make themselves known. But
we'll see.
We'll see.
By way of further introduction, so we know that you are Ted and I am Lisa, we are both improvisers.
Ooh.
And we interact with that field to varying degrees of intensity or saturation, I suppose you could say. But for the purposes of this collaboration, I would say that, you tell me if this is the way that you envision it or conceptualize it. Ted is more heavily and thoroughly steeped in the world of mindfulness.
Like a nice tea.
Approaching the world of improvisation, although he has deep roots in improv.
Sure.
I am more thoroughly steeped in the land of improvisation with tentacles heading out into the world of mindfulness with varying degrees of success, but a lot of curiosity.
If you take your tea with octopus in it, so you're steeped, but you've got the tentacles reaching out.
Yeah, I feel like the metaphor starts to fall apart at that point.
But yeah, that makes sense to me.
And what we know is that we are both interested in improvisation and the way that it can be applied to basically personal development, personal growth.
That's right.
Mindfulness also in that same way, and the ways that they overlap and intersect are interesting to both of us. So,
and we'll talk more, I'm confident, about what exactly we mean by mindfulness as we get into this. But I'm thinking, at minimum, it's about being present with one's full awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether you're meditating in a very formal fashion or you're improvising on stage with somebody else and trying to create something, that kind of presence is something that's super helpful.
I think both disciplines cultivate that skill.
Exactly.
And that's what is interesting.
And so...
But it manifests in very different ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we are doing this together because we have created this partnership to explore this stuff. And we offer workshops and we've done retreats together. We've done some shows together.
Yeah. Some talks together.
Have taken this out to other people.
Yeah.
And we love hanging out with each other.
Yeah.
So we're glad you're here with us.
Yeah. So that's kind of what it is. That's kind of what the parameters of what this is.
It's a territory.
It, as we mentioned, it is called Monster Baby.
Ooh.
: A curious romp through the worlds of... worlds? worlds of mindfulness and improvisation. And it makes sense to explain why it's called Monster Baby.
I think it does. Because it's a very curious name.
It is.
Perhaps it's frightening even.
Maybe. Not unlike what you may discover if you get truly present and mindful.
Ah.
Ah.
Well, yeah. So there, for me, this is going back to a performance that we did. We had a reunion of the Stanford Improvisers. Mm-hmm. We were both improvisers at Stanford and studied with Patricia Ryan Madsen.
Incredible guru of a woman.
Just beautiful woman.
Yeah.
A wise soul. And so we, by fate, chance, serendipity, archangels swirling to conspire, we got put on the same team, and we got to be on this team that actually made it through several rounds of competition. We made it to the finals. We had just a great weekend of playing, and we had a ton of fun together. We were with three other people, and we just had a great time. But in one of the scenes we did, there was a scene where Lisa got endowed as this baby that was terrorizing.
It was had superhuman strength.
Superhuman strength.
And was born as an ogre of a baby. Just yeah. Huge, strong, could walk immediately upon being born. And I terrorized the hospital.
Emerged from the womb, started breaking the shackles and romping through the hospital.
Yes.
And I came on as an orderly or like a nurse or some hospital attendant.
Yeah.
Coming down the hall like, no, you can't do that. You can't. And you just swatted me.
Yeah.
And I went flying.
Right.
Audience loved it. I loved it. It was total fun to get swatted away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this moment, for me, it was the first time I had improvised in a while. And so it felt super alive, but it felt like, yes, this is the kind of teamwork I love.
We're playing together.
Yeah.
It's like very exciting.
And we thought, okay, so that's kind of the moment. That was one of the first times that we really connected.
Yeah. I feel like that was in some ways one of the early moments of our partnership.
A seed.
Without knowing that that's what it was at the time.
That's right.
So we honor that moment in the title.
We honor that moment.
But then there's also this kind of interesting, there are nice parallels, I think, in terms of the explorations of mindfulness and improvisation. It echoes of those disciplines in both the words monster and baby in terms of you don't know what you're going to find. Sometimes it is frightening.
Yes.
There's the whole Zen mind, beginner's mind, kind of see the world with fresh eyes in terms of the baby part of that. The monster part of it is like you unleash your own freedom and creativity and there's a liberation that happens and it's hard to put that back. You know, the cat's out of the bag, you can't put it back. Yeah. So there's that monstrous quality of who knows what's going to happen when we tap into that.
Right.
And I like that as well.
I like the notion that we have something within us, some creative force or some being that is young. It's been lying dormant. So it's like this baby because it's still raw.
Oh, yeah.
And it's unrefined.
That's nice.
So then it, like, if you give birth to it, it's going to have, maybe going to have some rough edges, but it's got this power and vitality, potential for growth. You haven't even seen it yet. It's just new.
What happens to it once you've unleashed it and you've been playing with it for a while? Does it grow up?
Yeah, you get a monster teen.
Monster adolescent, which is kind of the same thing.
That's a little redundant.
There's also the nice thing, which is that my hair is not unlike Medusa's, so that I'm kind of like a monster, and Ted is bald, and so he's like a baby.
It's hilarious.
I just thought of that.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Very true. Okay, so if you are wondering, Lisa's the monster, and I am the baby.
If we were to cast ourselves... Yeah. That's how the casting would work out.
Baby with a goatee.
I think that's about right.
It sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Ted's a little bit more sensitive than I am.
Aww.
I think. Wouldn't you say?
Sure.
I feel like I am a little bit more, I wreak a little bit more havoc where I go.
Yeah, havoc wreaking.
I'm a friend of chaos.
Friend of chaos.
Yeah.
I'm a little more controlled.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit controlled. Do you know, you don't even know that reference.
No.
Donnie and Marie Osmond show. No. Okay. Nope. Another difference between me and Lisa. is that about, I'm a little bit older.
About 13 years.
Yeah, 13 or 14 years. So when I was 8 years old, the Donnie Marie Osmond show debuted on my birthday. And we left pizza at the Tower Restaurant in Keene, New Hampshire to go see the Donnie Marie show at 8 o'clock when it was on time. And that was their opening song. One of them said, I'm a little bit country. And the other one said, I'm a little bit rock and roll. And they did this exchange back and forth.
Oh, that's nice. I'm a little bit monster. I'm a little bit baby. That's nice. We'll do a song someday.
But let's not be Mormon together. Nothing against Mormons. Lovely people. Donnie and Marie Osmond are Mormon.
Great. Yeah. That's a difference between Ted and I and Donnie and Marie Osmond. We could go through all the differences that there are between us and anyone in the world, but we'll leave it at that, I think.
That sounds good.
The next note on my little note about things to talk about is, why are we doing this? Have we already covered that?
We got a little bit into it.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add?
I think it's important to say that we both have a passion for improvisation. So we like to do it, but it's more than that.
Yes.
That there's something about the way Patricia taught me, and I think taught us, that improv is not just comedy, for one. It's not even just theater. It's a way of being in the world that shows you possibility, that connects you to different people, that teaches you to say yes where most people say no, and so you invite adventure in.
Yeah.
And that we're passionate about that and about sharing it, and that we're still discovering what that means to us. So there's something about wanting to explore this with each other, but wanting to share that exploration with other people.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yes. Agreed. I have found it very powerful since the time I started learning it, and of late have really, really enjoyed figuring out how to articulate it in a way that lands with people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really fun.
Yeah.
So this is a chance to do that. I am also a big time external processor. Mm-hmm. Oh, another difference between Ted and I. I think I'm about as far down the extroversion scale as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there are people who are further, but I'm down the line in that direction. And one of the things that means is that I figure out what I think by saying it and then seeing how it sounds. And so getting a chance to kind of jam this stuff out and talk about it is exciting to me for that reason as well.
Yeah, and this is a little bit of a stretch for me. Normally I'd have my thoughts all written out, sorted out, clarified.
Yes.
Not codified, but clarified.
Anyway. Yeah.
Ready to be bandied.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm surfing.
You might have to hatch something before it's totally ready.
That could happen. Like a monster.
Baby. Like a monster baby. A baby monster. All right. So that's the background.
I have a question, though.
Yes.
Before we go further. Do we have a particular type of monster we're thinking of? Like a lizard? A dragon? Like Monsters, Inc.? Do you have a vision? An image?
Yeah.
Is it humanoid?
No, it's not. It's like a swamp monster.
Okay.
It's like got a snout.
It's got some wet
teeth.
Like dripping?
Like scales.
Okay.
But it walks on 2 feet.
Okay.
And has...
I'm thinking it smiles sometimes.
Yeah.
It stops and kind of checks things out.
Yeah, it's got big sharp teeth.
Absolutely. And a tail.
And it's dark in color, a tail, the claws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some either pointy ears or eyeballs that stick up out of its head.
Oh, nice.
That's an image that I have.
Amphibious.
Yes.
Yeah, comfortable in water.
Comfortable in water.
Like that, nice, okay.
Yeah.
Can breathe the air.
I guess so. Sure. Yes, because it can be on land as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
That's how I see it.
We're on the same line.
Here. Great. It's not a fuzzy monster.
No.
It's not a cyclops.
No, it's not a bird.
No. Yeah, it's a scaly.
Although dinosaurs and birds are in the same family.
Is that like Godzilla? Is it like a lizard?
Godzilla's he's a big lizard.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, kind of a Godzilla-ish.
Yeah, but not quite.
Godzilloid.
Not quite. I don't think it's lizard. I don't think it's lizard.
Okay. And it's not that big. It's not terrorizing a city.
Big. No, it's not that big.
Not yet.
We don't know what's going to happen. That's the whole point.
We're unleashing a beast. Yeah, that makes good sense. So that's kind of the background of what we're getting into.
Yeah.
And we're envisioning, assuming all goes well here, that we'll get into different topics that have to do with improv and meditation and mindfulness and how those two interweave.
And then it'll go where it goes.
And it goes where it goes.
I think.
One thing we thought that just always pops up as one of the first things to confront when talking about this stuff for me, is our relationship to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And how so many of us are afraid to mess up
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And especially shows up if we're trying something new or something risky, like improvisational theater, where we're trying to come up with something in front of other people. But even in meditation, where it's like, I want to do it right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, I tried meditating. Yeah, I tried meditating twice.
I tried it.
I did it twice for 5 minutes and I couldn't keep my mind steady.
Yeah.
Or I was thinking a lot.
Oh, I'm so bad at it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. Because with meditation, anyway, there's doing it or not doing it. There's actually very little, my feeling about it. The way I'm looking at it right now in my life is like, if you're doing it, you're doing it.
Yeah.
Kind of regardless of what happens inside of it.
That's right.
And that the quality of what happens inside of it will change.
Yeah.
Depending on how long you've been doing it and what you're, you know, but that doing it, whether you're a complete monkey mind or not, you're doing it. Like, it's like a 0-1, it's a binary thing.
And what's the doing it?
Quiet time.
Ah.
Sitting. Right? So, for meditation anyway.
Okay.
It's like, I sit down and I'm with the goal of focusing on my breathing, right?
Yeah.
And whether I do that 100% or not is not the point.
Right.
It's like, if every other second I discover that I'm thinking about this other thing or whatever, I've spent the time doing it, and so it's like, yep, I meditated today. I did it.
Interesting.
I succeeded.
Yeah.
But I think that's how I'm looking at it now, and maybe that's because I just want to get into a habit of doing it. And so I'm building that habit.
For me, if I don't meditate in the morning or do some sort of yoga, stretching kind of stuff, my day is very different.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do take 20 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever it is, there's just a buoyancy and a buffer to everything. It's like I've got more spaciousness mm-hmm. to the whole day. What you're describing sounds to me like meditation, which is, I think of it as a disciplined practice of mm-hmm. mindfulness. And that when we were talking about doing it, that the practice of mindfulness is just bringing attention back to the present moment.
Yeah.
And it's, rather than being in the thinking mind of evaluating, planning, reviewing, judging, sorting, configuring, it's yeah. what's happening here and now in my body, with my senses, maybe with my thoughts or my feelings.
Right.
And so, you can do that however your mind is. You can say, or I can say, check out my mind right now. It's yeah. really going crazy.
Wow, I can't, I'm having trouble focusing.
Yeah, and that's the practice.
That's it. That's doing it. That's doing it.
You can't fail at that.
Right.
If you are just doing that. The act of coming back to say, oh, wow, I feel like I'm failing, is itself a successful mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
More mindfulness moment.
Right.
So mindfulness gives us this chance to play with failure that way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, improv does too, because yeah. we have this circus bow tradition
mm-hmm.
that I don't remember. I again, Patricia must have taught us this somewhere back
there. Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, yes.
But the notion that you kind of can't mess up,
yeah.
right? That the only way that you can mess up is if your partners don't support your idea. And the only way your partner can mess up is if you don't support their idea. Right? And that's not even it either.
It's not even really, it's like, how can you mess up? What's a... I mean, right, this is interesting. Because...
Right.
So whatever happens, we can use it.
Yes.
So it's reframing failure in that way. And then there's also, I feel like that's what happens after you've done the thing and taken the risk. And I feel like the adjustment to make before you've taken the risk is, it'll be okay if this doesn't go well.
Mm.
It's shifting your expectation of the stakes. It's shifting your understanding of the stakes of this risk.
Okay.
So the circus bow is a way to be like, well, worst thing that we retrain how we see failure as a ta-da, woohoo! I get to celebrate that moment if it did not go how I planned, and if I did mess up and I didn't get the rules right and I made a mistake right. or whatever.
I forgot something.
It's a real mistake. It's not that it's not a mistake.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. But it's okay. You made a mistake. It's fine.
By circus bow, we mean like if a trapeze artist falls and they hit the net and they come back up, they pop up and they put their arms up high in the air.
Take a big bow.
Big smile on their face. Take a big bow. The audience goes crazy. Like, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Still going.
And I tried it.
Yeah.
And I will accept your applause for trying it. And it, I mean, it's like there's so many nuances in this, right? Like, you deserve credit for making the attempt.
For taking the risk.
For taking the you deserve credit for taking the risk. Also, there's that audience performer relationship of if I skulk away ashamed of myself, I have made a stadium full of people feel bad for me.
Yes.
Which is not what they came to do. So there's like a customer service element in this of I'm not going to make you feel guilty for my mistake, for watching me mess up. I'm fine. Everything is fine. And you will take your cue off of me of not feeling bad. And that's a big time, like John Stone performer. It's sportsmanship and so or showmanship. Of you're not going to, I'm not going to go down with it.
And by John Stone, we mean Keith John Stone.
Keith John Stone. Author of improv, creator of theater sports, one of the founding fathers of modern performance improv, not the only one.
Yeah. So you've got the relationship with the audience. You've got the, I'm still here. I'm good to go. There's also an element that's like, when we're talking about relationship to failure, I think even comes before that, that's a relationship to our spontaneity of, you know, we edit our ideas before they even come out because we think they'll be boring or obscene or stupid or somehow show something about us that we don't want people to see.
Yeah.
And the part of improvisational theater is to say, let it come through. And in order to do that, you have to free up your concern about failure, right?
Yeah, and I guess in that you're saying that the fear of failure is keeping you from saying those things because you fear you will look silly and that will be interpreted as a failure?
Or if you get the rules wrong, or if you hit the wrong rhythm, or you'll look incapable.
Yeah.
And somehow people will judge you.
Yeah.
But there's a piece, too, when you were talking about the customer service aspect with the audience.
Yeah.
There's also... I've heard you discuss, I've heard others have discussed, that when we're in an improv scene, if I mess up, let's say you've established your name as Barbara and I come in and I call you Juliet, and I realize that, and I get in that flinch of like, oh, damn it, I got the name wrong. Whatever time I spend berating myself or flinching like that, I'm no longer present to you, I'm no longer picking up what's happening in the scene. I'm not serving the story anymore.
Right. You're not available.
That's right.
You're not available.
So if that's my relationship to failure, I'm no longer good anymore.
Right.
So that's another reason why improvisers have to change their relationship to failure.
Yes. Which is actually kind of nice because I think it, in some ways, I always liked teaching it this way where so I've worked with improvisers where this is their main issue is like, you got to get over your failure. You've got to quit punishing yourself.
Yes.
You're too hard on yourself. And the shift that I take them through is not, oh, come on, you got to stop beating yourself up. You know, you be kinder to yourself. It's like, get over yourself, not for you. Get over yourself for us.
Right.
Like, we need you.
Yeah.
More than your punishment does. So get back here. Whatever how you feel, get it here for us, you know? It kind of flips it around so that it's like, your pity party is not only uncomfortable for you, it is unproductive for everybody else.
That's right.
So get out of it.
It's just not functional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And it doesn't, that doesn't say the mistake didn't happen. It's not like, oh no, that you forgot the name
didn't matter. It wasn't that bad. It's like, no, it's fine. It was a mistake. Let's keep playing.
It's done.
Yeah. Move on. I mean, there's something there. I feel like there is, that's one of the big... commonalities, maybe, between mindfulness and improv is that we're dealing with what we have in front of us right now. And the fact that 2 seconds ago you failed at something and you made a mistake is not relevant right now.
That's
the past. So, yeah, fine. It didn't go well. Let's play.
Yes.
And maybe we're still dealing with ramifications of what happened, but we can deal with those productively, or we can deal with them, like, remedially and painfully.
Yeah.
And the reverberations of failure are not pleasant to play with.
Right.
So let it just be something that happened, and let's keep playing with it.
Yeah. And then when it comes time to go back to it, you can still approach it with a curiosity and kindness. And that's to me, is another gift out of the mindfulness tradition, is to say, I'm going to pay attention to the present moment on purpose with this quality of curiosity and kindness, mm-hmm. rather than a kind of like a judgmental edge or like a performance aspect.
Or an attachment to what it is that you find there.
It's like, what is here And how can I be kind to myself and other people about that?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it's got that quality. But so this, okay, so this loops around to the bookmark then.
Yeah.
Which I think that a lot of this fear of failure is not just about performance. It's not just about a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset, which we can talk about later.
Yeah.
But it's really, it's ultimately about being seen. And that we're afraid of showing who we are, including our frailty and our greatness. So it's like, I'm not going to take risks. I'm not going to put myself out there on stage, or I'm not going to stay present in my life. Because if I really, if I'm really present with another person in a moment, or if I'm really there on stage and being bold,
they'll see all my shit.
They're going to see stuff.
Yeah.
And that ultimately there's this thing about choosing vulnerability, because ultimately, yeah, we can't connect authentically without showing who we are.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I'm now playing with this notion of, okay, I want to keep changing my relationship to failure because I'm so interested in connecting with other people and connecting with the world. You know, so it's like, am I going to show up? Yeah. And in that, I'm probably going to mess up. Not probably. I'm definitely going to mess up.
Mm. And this is interesting.
So I want to hang out with people who are, who know how to change their relationship to that as well.
Yeah.
Who can see my...
Well, that's the thing, is like your willingness to fail is so... Rather, one's willingness to fail is... It's so not a thing that you can accomplish on your own in some ways. You can't, you can start there, and then you need to be failing in a context that will not send you back into your shell for it.
That's right.
So the idea of, I'm going to hang around with people who don't punish me for failing, who don't make me feel bad for showing vulnerability, who don't, like, yeah, I guess you can arm yourself with a tolerance for being berated, but better to take yourself out of that context and put yourself in a place that will...
Yeah.
That will accept that, that will speak that language with you.
I think the more we hang out with people who do this for each other, the more inner strength we develop.
Yeah. Then we can
to
take
do
it out
for ourselves.
To, yeah.
And I think that's part of what happened with me. You know, I was a teacher at a private boarding school for 12 years. I loved being there, but I didn't have that kind of community of folks who supported me, right, in that same way. I had some friends, but when I started hanging out with improvisers more here in San Francisco or in Calgary, it was like, oh my God, this is a different way of being. And Matt Smith, an improviser up in Seattle, talks about how there's a certain selfishness in making space for failures in a group of improvisers. Like, if I give you space for it, I can trust that you're going to give me space. And then together we're creating this net.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, so now, and I've heard you say this before too, so maybe you can get to it again, but when we're with other people who make space for us, who we know are going to support us, we get to better ideas.
Totally.
That's what a thrill that is. So yeah, those are the people I want to hang out with.
Right.
And so...
it's like their attitude is fertilizer.
Yes. But in the good kind of fertilizer.
Yeah, the fertilizer, it fertilizes the fertile ground of your imagination.
Or maybe it's like sunshine.
It's like that attitude encourages more growth, the idea that it's going to be accepted.
Who we choose to hang out with matters. This is part of what we're saying, right?
Yeah.
The Buddha called that right association.
Hmm.
So in Buddhism, there's this eightfold path of ways to reach enlightenment and to reach the height or depth of compassion for the world, right? And so that's right speech and right intention and right work, right livelihood, all this kind of stuff. But before you even get to the Eightfold Path, he says, you have to have right association. You got to be with the right people.
Hmm.
Because if you're not, they're going to derail you.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, and so now I'm thinking about this all the time.
That's so interesting.
Who am I choosing to hang out with, and what are they supporting?
Yeah.
And it matters.
Yeah.
It matters. And so I think that I've developed over the last couple of years this resilience to say, oh, when I'm around people who aren't treating me the way I want to be treated,
I don't hang out with them.
I'm not going to hang out with those people.
Yeah.
And it's not like they're bad people. They're just not where I want to be.
Yeah.
And so that choice is like, that's the initial choice. Then where do we go from there?
Yeah, right.
So
it's like company culture.
Yep.
I feel like I've talked to a few people right now who are choosing where to work, who are like interviewing for jobs and things.
Yeah.
And figuring out, all right, what's the pool I want to be swimming in?
Mm.
Almost equally to what's the work that we're doing here. Mm-hmm. Is like, what does it feel like to be with these people?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, swimming in a pool of yes is real different than swimming in a pool of no. That's for another episode, maybe. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Everything is so connected, though. How Buddhist?
How Buddhist?
So, one thing that I find interesting about failure is I teach at Stanford, and I taught a class called Improv and Design, and it was all about looking for ways to play sneaky tricks on the public to get them to engender these principles, these positive principles of improvisation, of behaving improvisationally. So generously, attentively, openly, how to make people better listeners, how to get people to open up and tell stories truthfully, things like that. Without them really knowing, kind of guerrilla, like installation art that gets them interacting with one another. So for instance, there's a tree in San Francisco. There's one in my neighborhood. I think there's another one in Potrero Hill called the Gratitude Tree. And you go by it and there's these little tags, they look like little luggage tags, and they're on strings, and there's a little envelope full of them with a pencil. You can write something you're grateful for, and you tie it to the tree. And this tree is heavily laden with gratitude.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful. And so that's an example of a something out in the world that people interact with and are put back in touch with their own gratitude, which it feels very improvisational. Like gratitude, being grateful for the gift, seeing things as a gift, is a very improvisational mindset. So we did this, and one person put up a failure board in their dorm, in their residence.
Mm.
So he was like, well, we need to celebrate our failure more. We never talk about it. Like we fail. We think we're the only ones who have made these mistakes, and then it's isolating. We isolate more. We try to hide it. We don't want anyone to know about it. What if we put failures all out in the open and celebrated each other for them? And
I'm really curious to see where this is going to go.
Yeah. So
I feel like there's going to be a
well, there's a
twist.
There's a twist, because some of it was really positive. Some of it was, I want to say maybe he did. He put the board up and then said, like, if you want to talk about this, he created an online forum or something. There was some place where he received some feedback about it. And some of it was great, like, I studied for this exam and I failed, or I asked this girl out and she said no, or I thought I was going to major in this and I couldn't hack it and I changed my, you know, the failures in the way that we think about them. I tried this thing and it didn't work. I tried this thing and it didn't work. And this deeper level of failure was uncovered, which was, I'm trying to be a happy person.
Mm.
I'm supposed to be. You know, it was like this deeper, more fundamental feeling that, like, I'm not good at life.
Whoa.
I don't know how to be friends with people. I can't. I'm not, you know, it's like, so the student was like, you know, there's these different kinds of failures. Mm-hmm. There's the pretty straight shot. I tried this thing, I failed. I applied for this job, I didn't get it. I, you know, tried to jump through this hoop and I missed.
I can use it as a stepping stone.
I can use it. Yeah, it's like, I can learn from it, or I'll try again, or pick yourself up and brush yourself off. And then there's the kind of failure, which feels like a failure that is like a deeper, more personal, more penetrating,
almost an identity thing.
Almost an identity thing of like, this is who I am, and that feels like a failure.
Mm.
And it was like, really, it was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
What? Oh, God. You know, like.
So what did he do about it?
Well, he just brought it up for conversation.
Okay.
And we kind of talked about it a little bit, but I have thought about it ever since. Because how does, woohoo, ta-da, I failed, fit in with something that is a deeper, darker thing where it's not so clear cut. It's not a single incident. It's like, a more grave thing, or something horrible happens to you and you're carrying shame with you.
Beautiful question.
About that. Like, how do you, it's a far harder thing just to like, oh, throw your hands in the air woohoo. And you don't want anyone to feel bad for you. So don't.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that this is where that deeper practice of curiosity and kindness comes in.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, can I sit with this feeling and notice it and be curious about it and have my friends with me and explore it?
Yeah.
And I still think that those, every little time we do that, woohoo, when it's about something superficial. Oh, I left my keys and I have to go back into the house.
Right.
Or whatever, I put the wrong adverb at the end of the email and I sent it.
Oh. Yeah. Little things.
Every single time that we can do the woohoo, it's like a drop of water.
We build.
And we cleanse.
Yeah.
You know, and we just cleanse. We cleanse more and we cleanse more. And eventually, that water like seeps into those deeper levels. So then when we uncover this more existential crap, I don't think I've lived my life the way I want to live it.
Mm-hmm.
That now we've got this reservoir to draw on to say, okay, what if I take the same approach to this? Yeah, and I thought you were going to get to a twist that often comes up in this conversation, which is, why are we celebrating failure?
Ah, no.
You know, that...
That's an interesting question as well.
Yeah, because that I often hear that, and I think it's really important to distinguish. We're not celebrating the failure. We're changing the relationship to it and celebrating that change.
Right. And celebrating, I mean, so the place that I got to it, the place that I got to with it is that celebrating is almost the wrong word.
Yeah.
And through doing workshops and hearing people respond to just very simple exercises around, ta-da, woohoo, you know, like... games in which it's designed that people fail over and over again, and we prescribe this is how you respond, this is what you do, and then talk about what that feels like, is that there is an acknowledgement that I think a lot of the pain of failure comes from feeling like you've done something you weren't supposed to do, and almost trying to change that reality or hide it from yourself,
right.
Hide it from the people around you, and that there is something really marvelous about putting it right out of the open and not fighting to make it different. I totally screwed up. I did a bad thing, or I am ashamed of who I am, or I don't feel like a worthy inhabitant of space, or you know, whatever it is, however deep it is. And I also want to recognize that I don't fight those battles. And
right.
So there is a part of that I don't, I'm not speaking from experience there.
Right.
But I think there is an acknowledgement that lets it move through a little bit. That once you've named it, you've shined some light on it, you're like, that's what's going on. I feel completely inferior, or I feel completely invalid, or I feel whatever it is. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that honesty,
it unlocks something. It unlocks something.
I, the image that came to me was like a lift of air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that all of a sudden there's this flow of air and a whoo. Now I've got some buoyancy. Now I've got some rhythm that wasn't there. So fluidity.
Right. At least you've called it what it is. There's an at least there's an alignment that I think so much pain is trying to change the perception of reality to match how you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not what I want to be, so I will uphold this idea that I'm something different, or that this is easier for me or whatever. And having a place where you can be completely honest and okay with that thing, with just that being the truth.
Right.
Because it is, and you're pretending that it isn't, doesn't change the fact that this is what's going on.
And some people that's going to scare the crap out of.
Yeah. Monster. That's the monster.
The monster. Because you're being real, and your realness is like a bell that rings and starts vibrating their authenticity.
Reality. Yeah.
And if they're not willing to face it, or they're not capable, they don't have that capacity, then it's exceedingly threatening for them. But, or I should say, and if you're around people who do have that space, there's nothing more vital or more refreshing or electrifying. Like somebody speaking their truth and not shying away from it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, I guess I get to be myself.
Right.
Now. Yeah.
It's big, big, big.
Those are people I want to be around.
Yeah.
So I like where we've gone with this, because we're acknowledging that there's a real tenderness behind this field we're in.
Yeah.
You know, that improvisation is a delight. And almost every workshop I've ever led or attended, there's tons of laughter.
Oh, yeah.
And most people think of improv as comedy. There's almost always laughter. And there's this other place it can bring us to, as can meditation, noticing what is real, the fullness of what is real, that has the humor and the poignancy both at the same time.
Yep.
And I love that because that gives me permission to have all of my human self.
Mm-hmm.
And to be with people who are doing the same thing. And then together we do that in community. It's like, great.
Yeah.
This is how I want to be.
It is a deep dive into being human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
I like that. You've used that kind of terminology before. I've heard you say stuff like that. That improvisation is a way to help us be our fullest, most human selves.
Yeah, because we don't practice that.
Yeah.
And it is something you can practice.
Yeah.
But there's no place to practice it, except with improv.
Right.
You can actually practice it. You can read all the books you want about it, about being authentic or letting failure go or whatever. But I think that, so celebrating failure, to go back to that bit, I think accepting failure, mm-hmm, is maybe a better term than celebrating it.
Yeah. I think it's celebrating the willingness
to fail. Mm. Sometimes, right? Sometimes failure is an indicator of a good thing. But it's because sometimes you fail without being willing to, right? Like, there's times when you just mess up, and it's not because you took a particularly big risk. It's because you did something wrong. You did something, or there's times when you failed, mm-hmm, and it wasn't some noble risk you took,
right,
that got you to that place. It's that you fucked up.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about what kind of language is appropriate for this podcast.
Beep.
But I think there are those times.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the power, we don't want to, we're not celebrating that. I don't want to celebrate my lack of attention,
right,
or my... You know, like, I think that's the thing, is that sometimes this can feel so Pollyanna, because it's like, you screwed up, you didn't leave enough time to complete this project, so you did a bad thing, and there were bad ramifications.
Right.
People suffered because of your screw-up. Woohoo! I took a
yeah,
risk!
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's going to happen. It's like, no, you didn't do a good enough job. Right? Like, I can imagine this conversation. And I think the place to reconcile those things is... on the other side of that failure, having made the mistakes,
yes,
that I should have known and could have known were coming and didn't foresee or whatever, right? So it's like, let's imagine that there's a failure that is truly my fault.
Yes.
Which, right. Let's imagine that.
Then, as hard as that is for me to fathom.
As difficult
that,
as that,
that could be,
just
yeah,
pretend that I could ever do something like that. That there is still power in... that acknowledgement and fully owning, mm-hmm, the failure and bringing it into the light and not covering it in your shame. Because as long as you're spending all that energy covering it in your shame, which I can recognize, like when I make a, yep, big mistake, I feel somehow that I am doing, that I am paying penance or something. The more visible my,
right,
shame is,
people know that you're,
I'm working,
oh,
it,
yes,
off. I'm working off that failure. Right. And I think that is flawed.
That's BS.
Is like, no, fine. Own it fully. Be like, man, that was all my fault. It was totally my fault. I made a mistake. I feel bad. Like, go about the things you need to do to make it right with the people who have suffered because of your,
yes,
shortcoming. Own it. Acknowledge it. And there's a piece of that that's like, I am a human being.
Yeah.
This is what that is making big, fat mistakes. This is a part of it. I've just done that. It is uncomfortable. I feel that.
And now you repair it.
And now what do we do?
As it goes back to this thing about, am I on stage? Don't spend time beating yourself up. Repair the wounds that you've created.
Keep telling the story.
Keep telling the story.
Go
back to those
it.
People.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I did this. And there's a question of, are you going to take responsibility to change it so that it won't happen again?
Yeah.
And that takes more work than beating oneself up, I think. You know, to take responsibility.
Yeah.
It's like... there was a poet, Denise Levertov, a Jewish feminist poet that I read in college, and she said, it doesn't help to ask yourself whether you're guilty or not. Like, guilty of a mess up or,
right,
whatever, because if you say, no, I'm not guilty, you're free. You don't ever go back
You've
to it.
You've absolved
yourself
of...
Yeah. If you say, yes, I am guilty, then bam, bam, I'm terrible,
yeah,
woe with me. Neither of those gets you into the relationship that you need to be in.
Right.
So the question is, in what ways am I responsible and what am I going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like with this notion of failure, okay, I messed up. What do I need to do?
Yeah. What do I need to do?
What's next?
It's very powerful. I had a coach who put it in this beautiful way. She was like, because I had had a big failure where I do feel like I made big mistakes, that I should have done things differently, and a big thing failed, didn't come through the way I wanted it to, and it had this ripple effect on people around me. So I was feeling real bad, trying not to talk about it and stuff. And she flipped it around and she said, if you own all of that failure, you get all the good stuff that comes out of it.
Mm.
Like, it's your failure, and that means you get to own it. You get credit for moving forward with the good stuff you got from it. You get all of that.
Nice.
And it was this like flipping around of a perspective so that it felt like I won something, because that huge juicy failure was mine. And now I get to grapple with, so what now?
Mm.
It was very empowering. Yeah, it was a very empowering perspective.
If you never admit it, that stuff it's like piles of junk.
It's like you're burying stuff in the backyard and you're like, whatever, nothing. It wasn't there. It was fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Let the grass grow over it. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So whenever I teach improv, or whenever I teach anything, actually, at this point, I'm almost always starting with something about relationship to failure because of it. So I think it's appropriate that we started our initial podcast.
I think it sets. It's also nice because we're trying something that we've never done before, and it might be a grand failure.
Yeah.
So that's good.
We had some technical failures earlier today.
Yeah.
That people don't know about because this sounds so smooth. but I'm thinking this is probably a good place to wrap up.
I think so too.
All right, people, that is it. Thank you so much for joining us for this inaugural Monster Baby podcast.
Yeah, so happy that you listened, and we hope you enjoyed it. And if you would like to learn more about what either Ted or I are up to, you can check our websites. Mine is lisaroland.com.
Fantastic website. Brand new.
Brand new.
It's shiny and smells like a new car.
I would love for you to check it out.
Or you can come visit me at animalearning.com. It's like animal earning. A-N-I-M, as in Mary, A, learning.com.
Great.
It's tough to spell.
So we hope you'll go check those things out. And also, Ted and I lead workshops together, retreats, 3 to 5 day long retreats entitled Mindful Play, Playful Mind, which explores all of the stuff that we're talking about on these podcasts, the crossover between contemplative practice, improvisation, and personal growth, and how we can lead better lives using those skills.
Yeah, you got some meditation, you got some yoga, you got some artwork, you got lots of improv, you got amazing food, great people.
Beautiful places.
Beautiful places.
So we have one in May in Southern California, right between LA and San Diego.
Yep.
We've got one in June on the East Coast in Maine, and we have another one in September over Labor Weekend in Petaluma.
Yeah, just north of San Francisco, up at a place called the Earthrise Institute. Again, if you want more information about those, check either of our websites, or you can go to Facebook and check out Improv Wisdom Retreats.
Yeah.
And find us there.
So, we hope to interact with you and connect with you on one of those platforms, and we wish you a happy day.
And we'll see you on the next podcast again. Thanks so much.
Woohoo!
Ciao.
Bye.